Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully, so you can be confident that you're getting the right mortgage for you. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Kimberly Atkins, and this is On Point. In political ads during Pennsylvania's recent special election, viewers heard a lot about candidates Connor Lamb and Rick Saccone, but another name was frequently thrown in the mix, Nancy Pelosi. Republicans used her as a target, all that's wrong with Washington politics. Eventually, Lamb, a Democrat, distanced himself. To some, Pelosi is one of the most effective congressional leaders. To others, she's a villain, and some Democrats want her to step aside. This hour on Point, Nancy Pelosi and leadership in the Democratic Party. You can join us on air or online. What do you think? Is it time for Nancy Pelosi to step aside, or should the House Minority Leader keep her post? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter or Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me now from Washington is Heather Cagle, the congressional reporter for Politico, covering House Democrats. You can find a link to her story, headlined Democrats' Civil War Flares After Lamb's Upset Win, at our website, onpointradio.org. Heather, thanks so much for joining us today.
Hi, Kim. Thanks for having me.
So this Pennsylvania special election really reinvigorated this debate about congressional leadership at the top for Democrats, huh?
Yeah, you know, I think this is something that Democrats have been thinking about for a while, particularly late last year when Republicans in the House came out and said, they basically said, here's our playbook. We're going to run on the tax bill and we're going to run on Nancy Pelosi. And so you've had a lot of House Democrats that have privately been whispering among themselves and to reporters, wondering what the impact will be and if that will hold them back from taking the House. And this was kind of the first real test case for that we saw last week.
And in that Pennsylvania special, the Congressional Leadership Fund, a Republican super PAC, sponsored ads attacking Democratic candidate Connor Lamb during that race. Here's a clip from an attack ad singling Lamb out for his affiliation with Nancy Pelosi.
How do we know Connor Lamb is a Pelosi liberal? Lamb joined Pelosi to oppose your tax cut and to defend Obamacare. And Lamb worked in the Obama administration that encouraged sanctuary cities, which put illegal immigrants who commit crimes back on the street, and that negotiated the Iranian deal that gave billions to the leading funder of terrorism. Lamb and Pelosi, too liberal on too many issues.
So, Heather, why do Republicans see attacking Nancy Pelosi as a winning strategy? Do voters really care that much about her?
You know, that's a great question. And it's one that Democrats and Republicans will dispute, depending on who you ask. So Democrats say, obviously, this doesn't work that well. There are other factors and reasons why Republicans have been able to hold on to the House for the last 8 years. It's not just because Nancy Pelosi is our leader. Republicans say, oh, yes, it does work. We have the polling to prove it, even though they don't always show that polling. They do point to public polling that shows that she's very unpopular. But if you look at all of the polling of congressional leaders, not just her, but Speaker Ryan and others, they're generally all unpopular. But she is the one that has been the most villainized. And I think part of that is she is a lightning rod in a way. She's very progressive. She comes from San Francisco, so she doesn't always represent the views of voters in the Rust Belt, Middle America, and, you know, her longevity. She's been the leader for 15 years. Mm. So, you know, if voters don't know who Paul Ryan is necessarily or Mitch McConnell, they at least generally have some reference to who Nancy Pelosi is because she's been around so long.
Yeah. So Connor Lamb in that race, he rebutted the attack ads that were being launched against him, trying to tie him to Nancy Pelosi. Here's a clip of one of his campaign ads.
My opponent wants you to believe the biggest issue in this campaign is Nancy Pelosi. It's all a big lie. I've already said on the front page of the newspaper that I don't support Nancy Pelosi. The real issues are the ones that affect your lives. I'll protect Medicare and Social Security. My opponent will cut them. I'll protect healthcare and education. My opponent won't.
So Conor Lamb says he doesn't support Nancy Pelosi. He joins about a third of the caucus who voted against her in the last leadership election. What does that tell us?
You know, the ad that Conor Lamb came up with is interesting, and it's a pretty big turning point because we have seen candidates in the past be asked by reporters directly, will you support Pelosi? And they say no. But this is the first time, to my knowledge, that we've seen a Democratic candidate come up with a TV ad like that in such a tight race. And some Democratic members in the House after the election last week, I talked to them and they kept pointing to that and saying that's, you know, that may be where we're going in the future ahead of November. We might see a lot more of these TV ads. So that's pretty interesting. The thing about Conor Lamb is, you're right, he does join. There were about 63 Democrats who voted against Pelosi in the last leadership race. But he came to the caucus yesterday and he received a standing ovation from Pelosi and others. He was very well welcomed. He had a hard time getting out of the room because all these members wanted to congratulate him. So, you know, I think Pelosi understands that candidates need to say what they will say to win. And on her end, at least as a politician, there's not hard feelings there.
I see. So voters are on both sides of this. You can take a look at our Twitter feed and a couple of comments there. One from Michael Brown, who says, I think the party needs to go another direction than Pelosi. She's a very polarizing figure, even inside the party. And we need someone in the party with fresh ideas that can help move the party into the next generation. Nancy Hayes Pope, on the other hand, says, as for Pelosi, her only problem is sexism, ageism, and the unrelenting malignment from the right, who did the same to Hillary. Talk about that divide.
Yeah, there's definitely a divide among Democratic voters and within the House Democratic Caucus. And Pelosi's closest allies will point to her being the first female Speaker of the House. She's the female minority leader right now, has been the leader of Democrats, like I said, for 15 years, and say, you know what, the reason that she's so targeted by Republicans and is getting these attacks and her age is consistently brought up is because she is a woman. We don't see male leaders getting attacked like this. But on the other side, you have critics of her leadership who say, you know what, she did a great thing. She broke the marble ceiling, becoming the first female House Speaker. But she's also been here a very long time, and there's no obvious successor to her. It's time to start talking about the next steps and another plan. And, you know, there are a lot of strong feelings on both sides of those arguments. And I don't think that it's fair to say that the majority of the caucus is in one camp or the other. I think the 194 members we have in the House Democratic Caucus are pretty divided.
All right. Kendra is calling from Mountville, South Carolina. Hi there, Kendra.
Hi, Kim. Thanks so much for having me on the air. So I think it's perfectly fair game for a new generation of Congress people coming in to talk about new leadership. But I also am firmly convinced that we would not be having this conversation if Nancy Pelosi were not a woman. That because she's a woman, we're talking about, oh, she's so polarizing. When if she were a man, I think we would be praising her for her leadership in, you know, handling the caucus in some really tough years.
All right. So thanks for your call, Kendra. Brian's calling from Boonville, Missouri. What are your thoughts, Brian?
Hi, Kim. Just calling to say that I think Nancy Pelosi's net worth is over $100 million. She takes ungodly amounts of fundraising from corporations. I think it's time to find new leadership in both the House and Senate.
All right. Well, I'd like to bring another voice into the conversation. Crystal Ball joins us from King George, Virginia. She's founder and president of the People's House Project, a political startup focused on recruiting and supporting working class Democratic candidates in the Midwest and Appalachia, and co-host of The Hill's upcoming morning show. Crystal, thanks so much for joining us.
Hi, Kim. How are you?
I am good. Thank you for joining this conversation.
My pleasure.
So what do you think? Does Nancy Pelosi have her thumb on the pulse of Democratic voters?
No. You know, I thought very strongly after the election results of 2016, and not just what happened in 2016, but really the destruction of the Democratic Party and brand in most of the country that's occurred over the past decade, that it was time for a new leader. And, you know, I'm I am very personally sensitive to the concerns that there is sexism involved in the vilification of Nancy Pelosi, and I think that is certainly a part of it. But I think the more important part is the cultural positioning of Nancy Pelosi. You know, that the critique of the Democratic Party and the negative brand of the Democratic Party through most of the country is that we're elitist, we're out of touch, we're condescending. And I think she is the sort of perfect caricature and embodiment of that.
But Crystal, let me say this. Can't the same thing be said about Chuck Schumer? And he's not facing this kind of backlash.
Yes, but he is facing some backlash. I would actually like to see a different person in that position as well. But I would say that Nancy Pelosi is of the, you know, John Kerry, Michael Dukakis, Al Gore wing of the party, where they may be smart people, but they also don't connect with a lot of ordinary citizens. She is part of why we have this incredible brand obstacle to overcome in state after state. And I know people want to look at the successes, which are real, from her time as speaker, but you don't get to own those successes and distance yourself from the fact that over that time period, over the past 10 years, we've lost, you know, 1,000 state legislative seats. We've lost governor's mansions. We lost the House. We lost the Senate. And I'm not trying to lay all of that at Nancy Pelosi's feet, but a portion of the blame certainly belongs there.
Yeah, but Crystal, there is currently what is being called a Democratic wave in the few seconds we have left before we take a quick break. Does she deserve some of the credit for that?
No, I think that goes to Donald Trump and the re-engagement and activism there. But there's still the most effective attack that Republicans have to levy against Democrats, in particular in the Midwest and Appalachia, the places where I'm focused, is that our candidates are going to vote for Nancy Pelosi as Speaker. Now, I still think we're going to take the House regardless, but she is a weight and an obstacle for Democratic candidates running in most of the country.
Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Chances are you're confident when it comes to your work, your hobbies, and your life. Rocket Mortgage gives you that same level of confidence when it comes to buying a home or refinancing your existing home loan. Rocket Mortgage is simple, allowing you to fully understand all the details and be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLS ConsumerAccess.org, number 3030.
This is On Point. I'm Kimberly Atkins, and we're talking about Nancy Pelosi and the future of the Democratic Party. You can join the conversation. What issues should Democrats focus on as the country heads to midterm elections? Is leadership one of them? Follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. My guests today are Heather Cagle, congressional reporter for Politico, and Crystal Ball, founder and president of the People's House Project. And joining me now from New York is Peter Beinart, contributing editor for The Atlantic. You can find a link to his piece headlined "The Nancy Pelosi Problem" at our website, onpointradio.org. Peter, thanks so much for joining us today.
My pleasure.
So, again, you write about the Nancy Pelosi problem. On the one hand, she's great at whipping the caucus. She's a great fundraiser. On the other hand, she's really vilified. Talk more about that divide.
The more I research it, the more I did become convinced that her gender is the dominant factor in why she is so remarkably unpopular and why Republicans focus on her so much more than they do on Chuck Schumer or on Harry Reid, his predecessor. And I think the fundamental reason you start to understand when you look at literature on the way that people view women in power, and particularly ambitious women. The thing about being Speaker of the House is that to get to that job, you have to defeat and outmaneuver men. You have to continue to do that to do your job well, and she's done it very well. Mm. And you have to tell men what to do. right? The men in the House are basically serving under her. And if you look at the way the study, the academic work we have on the way people view female leaders, that produces a very negative, hostile response very often by men and even by some percentage of women as well. And I think that's the key factor more than anything else in the intense hostility to Nancy Pelosi. And it produces this terrible irony, which is, in a way, the more successful she is, the better she is at her job, the more she defeats and outmaneuvers her male opponents, the more hostility she provokes.
Well, Pelosi herself seemed unbothered last week when asked if the negative ads run by Republican groups in that Pennsylvania special were a major factor. She said she didn't think that had an impact on Lamb's win. Let's listen.
I just wanted him to win. I don't think that that really had that much impact on the race. He won. If we hadn't won, you might have a question, but we won. We won the race. People, the D next to his name was very significant.
What do you think about that, Peter?
I think Nancy Pelosi is a little bit of a hindrance, but I think that the problem is, I think people make too much of the fact that what makes her unpopular is the fact that she's a liberal from San Francisco. That's, in fact, you could depict Nancy Pelosi as an Italian, you know, American Catholic who stayed at home with five children and only went into office afterwards, right? The way she's framed, I think, has a lot to do with the inherent hostility that we see to women who exhibit political ambition. And you can see this happening to Elizabeth Warren, right? Elizabeth Warren's family's from Oklahoma. You would think that actually she would be a much different profile. But if you look at how high her negatives have gotten, much higher than Bernie Sanders, you see a pattern that we see again and again. We saw it with Hillary Clinton. We saw it. We're going to see it with whichever female presidential candidates run in the Democratic primary, I think, in 2020. I think ultimately it has to do with the kind of moral outrage and fear that female political power and ambition provoke more than any specific characteristics of the particular woman politician.
Crystal, what do you think of that?
Well, look, I don't think that there is any denying that gender is a significant and important role in the way that people judge leaders and female leaders in particular. But with Nancy Pelosi, I think the problem is that the caricature as this kind of out-of-touch, consummate insider elite has a ring of truth to it. That doesn't mean it is the truth, but it has a ring of truth to it. She's a multimillionaire. She's from a political family. She has a tendency to say sort of imperious things like describing the benefits to working class Americans from this tax bill as crumbs. And so I reject the idea that it's because she's too liberal. I think it's because she feels culturally distant from most of America. The fact that she's a woman definitely adds to that, but I don't think in her case that's a central thing. And one thing that does bother me at times about this debate is I can guarantee you if I look at my Twitter feed right now, I'm going to get all kinds of people telling me how sexist I am. On the flip side, there is a lack of space on the left to criticize any woman, even when it's justified. You're just labeled as sexist and sort of dismissed. And I'm not saying at all that's what Peter's doing here. I thought his piece was very smart and well-reasoned. But there's, you know, there's that issue as well. So the gender problem kind of cuts both ways.
And you pointed out wealth, according to roll call, Nancy Pelosi's net worth is around $16 million. Jane is calling from South Kingston, Rhode Island. Hi there, Jane.
Hi there, Kim. How are you today?
I'm good. What do you think about Nancy Pelosi?
I think the problem with Nancy Pelosi is that we need about 49 more of her wielding their power in the U.S. government and representing us across the country. I think that we are enabling these people that whine about being that she's out of touch. Out of touch. The people who are whining that she's out of touch are the people that are allowing our children to be killed in schools, because they're afraid they're going to lose, you know, the right to have automatic weapons. They're the people that have allowed their daughters to be sexually assaulted. 40 years later, it's finally becoming part of the social discourse so they can tell their story.
Mm.
You know, you look at women. Women carried this economy through the last through the last economic crisis that we had.
Yeah, Jane, thank you for the call. Heather, what about the point about women? It's at a time where women are wielding their political power more than ever. More women candidates are running. Does that count in Nancy Pelosi's favor?
You know, I think in a way it does. She's been the sole woman at the top for a long time. And she even said, and some House Democrats dispute whether she means this or not, but she said that if Hillary Clinton had won the presidency, Nancy Pelosi said she would have retired because then she wouldn't have been the only woman at the negotiating table in the White House. I think, you know, it is interesting because while women make up 50% of the population and we do have a record number of female candidates running for the House and Senate this year, they still only make up about 20% of Congress. And Pelosi is the only female leader that we have. And so I think, you know, to the point that if there were more women in higher positions of power and more representation that represented the U.S. population as a whole, that maybe these attacks would be a little bit different.
Mm. So Karen, go ahead.
I just want to insert into that, though, too, is that we do have an incredible record number of women running for office across the country and, you know, in states where normally we don't have and districts where we normally don't have serious contenders. We've got these top-flight, awesome, powerful women deeply connected in their communities. And Nancy Pelosi is a drag on their candidacies. Mm. You know, she is used to attack them and to drag down their chances of getting into the House this year. So while we're, you know, reluctant to criticize this one woman who's at the top, she is a hindrance to other women who are coming up right now who are trying to win seats in Congress.
All right, let's hear from Karen, who's calling from Charlotte, North Carolina. Go ahead, Karen.
Hi, Kim. There have been a lot of smokescreens and distractions with these elections in the past couple of years. This is a big one. Think about why there was a special election in Pennsylvania. They were replacing somebody who was, quote-unquote, pro-life, yet was caught helping to pay for an abortion, and I don't think this topic even came up. The Republicans just very easily brought up Nancy Pelosi as a scapegoat, a smokescreen, and the Democrats sort of fell for it by putting it in their commercials. I think Democrats need to not only focus on the real issues, they have to stop being such punching bags and just fight back in a better way. And I think focusing on Nancy Pelosi, I'm personally a little indifferent to her. Maybe we do need some new blood, but she was not the big issue in the Pennsylvania election recently.
All right. Thanks for the call, Karen. Peter, what do you think about that? Is Nancy Pelosi a distraction, a red herring?
I think Crystal is right that Nancy Pelosi probably does hurt Democrats a little bit. So from her point of view, given the work that she's doing, the really, really important and valuable work, I can see why it would be easier not to have Nancy Pelosi there. The only point I would make is I think we should not be naive, which is to say that those women who are running for Congress now, who are the emerging next generation, if we're lucky enough to see them win, if they are successful and they achieve positions of power in the House or one day run for Senate or President of the United States even, will face some of the same kind of withering attacks. The notion that you can, again, Elizabeth Warren has a very different profile, a much more populist profile than Nancy Pelosi, and yet what has become the dominant conversation about her? This Pocahontas comment, right? Mm. Which is absolutely connected to the kind of moral outrage that people tend to feel, at least in this era, maybe it'll change, you know, in coming generations, towards women who they see achieving positions of power. So, yeah, maybe Democrats would do better with a different speaker, but I don't think we should delude ourselves that other emerging women politicians will not face similar kinds of attacks.
Yeah, Pocahontas refers to the name that President Trump has taken to calling Elizabeth Warren because of her claims of Native American ancestry. Let's talk a little bit about the Democrats who are opposed to Nancy Pelosi. Democratic Congressman Seth Moulton of Massachusetts told NBC 10 Boston last week that he's still confident in his 2016 vote to oust Nancy Pelosi as House Speaker and his decision to continue speaking out against her leadership.
I was trying to do the right thing, and I'm proud for trying to do the right thing. And to be honest, an awful lot of people in the caucus, even people who have been longtime supporters of her, of hers, have come up to me and said, you know, Seth, keep going. We need some change. We need some new leadership. And we appreciate the fact that you're willing to stand up and say this.
So, Heather, Congressman Tim Ryan ran against Nancy Pelosi in the last leadership race. Congressman Moulton and others backed that bid. It got about a third of the vote. But at the same time, when it became clear that she was going to win, might that have skewed folks who were a little more nervous of standing up against her and affected their vote? How can we really measure how much Democratic support she has?
You know, it's actually pretty difficult because I think talking to a lot of members when that vote happened, they really liked Tim Ryan. I think he's a great guy, but they also didn't see him as the next natural successor to lead the Democratic caucus. And so for a lot of them, it was more a symbolic vote than anything. And granted, you know, this was an anonymous ballot. I mean, Pelosi is a great vote counter, so I'm sure she knew a lot of the people who were voting against her, but they didn't have to write their name down. But the thing is, a lot of Democrats complain privately, some publicly, like Moulton right now. But if you talk to them about what happens in November, a lot of them will also say, well, all bets are off. If we take back the House and, you know, she wants to be Speaker, I think that it would be very difficult to say no and deny her another bid. Now, granted, not everyone agrees with that, but that's where the debate is kind of focused around now. And so because that is such an unknown, I mean, it does look like we're looking at a Democratic wave here. But of course, you know, I've learned not to predict elections anymore. People don't really have, they don't know what's going to happen in November. And so they don't know what the path is for the leadership in November either. There are a lot of different scenarios they're considering, but it's really hard to kind of gauge her support at this point.
So, Peter, you have people like Congressman Moulton, who is recruiting veterans to run for Congress. And you have people like Tim Ryan, who talks about Democrats needing to reach out to the Rust Belt. And both seem to think that the current leadership isn't focusing on those things. What do you say to that?
The Democrats certainly have a problem with white working class voters. I think there, it's a bit of a problem to make the focus geographic, right? It's not as if the Democrats are struggling with African American voters or even Latino voters in the Rust Belt, right? They're struggling with white voters across the country, they have a bigger problem with white men, and particularly white men who haven't gone to college. Now, I think there's a really interesting debate about the degree to which a Democratic different position on trade would attract some of those workers, and that's a conversation that you have to put together what's the political question with the question of whether actually things like tariffs actually really benefit ordinary people or not. And I think there's some real questions about that. But I think that race is really the dominant central issue that the Democratic Party is facing in its hemorrhaging of white male voters, race and gender. And I think that's a bigger factor than kind of geographical concentration.
Crystal, what do you think? Is this about demographics?
Certainly, that's an important part of it. But I would also point out, I mean, it's not like even those core constituencies, the sort of core Democratic base that Peter was just referencing, in particular African Americans, were that excited about us. Certainly in 2016, those turnout numbers were down as well. So I think overall you have a party that you know, hasn't been inspiring both with their message and with their leadership, and has been disconnected from the concerns of a good chunk of the country. You know, there is some truth to the things that that many Americans tell pollsters they feel about the party. They feel that we're out of touch. They feel that we're disconnected. They feel that we're a party of elites. And, you know, it's easy to dismiss those concerns or to say that they just have to do with race, and they don't not have to do with race, but there's something there as well. One of the things that, you know, to go back and tie this into the Nancy Pelosi conversation, one of the things that was sort of dismaying to me, I was an advisor to Tim Ryan and his bid to become House Minority Leader. And one of the arguments that I got heard most commonly was, well, Nancy Pelosi's a great fundraiser. And I thought, what a strange argument for a party that is supposedly opposed to big money in politics that we should choose as our leader the person who works the, you know, Hamptons and Upper East Side cocktail circuit the best. And I think that is another important piece of this, where we just seem like hypocrites when we're talking about values like getting money out of politics, and yet that seems to be the thing that we kind of focus on the most in terms of our leadership and in terms of the way that we select and choose to support candidates.
This is On Point. I'm Kimberly Atkins. We're talking about Nancy Pelosi and women in politics. You can join the conversation. What effect do you think the attacks against Nancy Pelosi will have on women running for elected positions? My guests today are Heather Cagle, congressional reporter for Politico, and Crystal Ball, founder and president of the People's House Project, and Peter Beinart, a contributing editor at The Atlantic. And joining us on the line from Cedar Falls, Iowa, is Kelly. Hi, Kelly.
Hi, Kim. I'm a liberal living in Iowa, and I just wanted to bring up the point that it's not fair to just criticize Nancy Pelosi on her age. Charles Grassley is my senator, and in the groups I talk in with in Twitter and Facebook, Mr. Grassley's age is constantly being brought up, and people are not happy with the career politicians anymore, and I just don't think that more of the same is going to help us. It didn't help us in 2016.
All right. Thanks for your call, Kelly. What about that? Heather, you have the Republican congressman from Iowa, his age being brought up. You have other people within Congress who are not spring chicken, shall we say. Is this a bigger part of this debate?
Definitely. I think for a lot of Democrats in the House caucus, a lot of their unease doesn't just have to do with Pelosi's age, but also the two deputies underneath her, Whip Steny Hoyer and then the assistant leader, Jim Clyburn. They're all three in their late 70s. So there's no one in that natural successor position right behind her that is a young spring chicken, as we would say, to take over when she does decide to step down. And so I think that that is a huge part of what feeds a lot of anxieties within the caucus, separating this from the midterms, but just within the caucus when they look at their leadership and say, I know that we need new leaders at some point soon, but we don't even have a plan for who will be next. And granted, there is the Democratic caucus chair, who's number four in leadership. His name is Joe Crowley, and he's in his mid-50s. And some members see him as the next natural successor. And he is obviously 20 years younger than the top three. But, you know, I think that the anxiety of having their three leaders all be in their late 70s is definitely real and prevalent.
So one person who brings up Nancy Pelosi on the stump is President Trump. He disparaged Democrats for falling in line with Pelosi at the National Republican Congressional Committee dinner Tuesday. Let's listen.
These days, there's no such thing as a blue dog Democrat, a red state Democrat, or a conservative Democrat, because they are all Pelosi Democrats, weak on crime, weak on terrorism, and weak on national defense.
So, Crystal, where have all the blue dogs gone?
Well, they all lost their seats while Nancy Pelosi was leader. You know, the reality is there are a lot of different shades of Democrat, and the problem is, in a state like Kentucky, to use an example, a place where I have been living for the past 2 years, you used to be able to have a Kentucky Democrat that was distinct from the national brand. And in fact, Kentucky was the last southern state to hold on to a Democratic legislature because there was this strong differentiated brand that was very pro-labor, and I would say sort of classically progressive in terms of economic issues and populist, but maybe more conservative on social issues. Well, that old saying that all politics is local is no longer true. Now all politics is national, and there's no ability to separate from a national brand. So when you have a national brand that is deeply associated with, you know, long-serving insider coastal elites, it makes it very, very hard to win in places like Ohio, Michigan, Kentucky, Kansas, Indiana, you know, most states in the country, frankly. So, you know, that's where we are today, and that's why we're focused a lot right now as a party, we're finally doing the work of looking at the state level and how do we win back in these places where we've lost control of state legislatures. That task is going to be incredibly difficult until the reality and the perception of the national party changes, and Pelosi is one piece of that.
So, Peter, it's not just the president who's bringing up the loss of the Blue Dogs. Adam Green, the Progressive Change Campaign Committee chair, he declared that the days of Blue Dogs are over, too. How does this affect the debate about Pelosi?
Crystal's right that there's been a nationalization of politics in general, and that's also made it much more difficult for, you know, Republicans in northern states. Look at a state like New Hampshire, for instance, which was a Republican stronghold, but is basically, as politics has been nationalized, Republicans have tended to lose there. We will have some more moderate to conservative Democrats who get elected probably as a result of this election. And I think that the important thing to try to kind of figure out is what exactly is the character of this moderation. I think it's important to distinguish two different kinds of things. To be genuinely economically progressive, like Crystal talks about, and yet, you know, make some concession to the fact that you are in areas where there are, which are more pro-gun, for instance, or more conservative on issues like abortion, is one thing. What worries me is that some of the blue dog Democratic types in the past have basically been very, very pro-corporate. The kind of moderation has been not just on those cultural issues, but actually has been basically a kind of a very anti-progressive view in terms of shilling for basically local, large corporate interests. And so I think those are two forms of kind of quote-unquote moderate democratic ideology that we need to distinguish as we look at the new crop of folks that are likely to get elected in the Democratic wave this fall.
I totally agree with that. And, you know, I believe very much that it's this big tent versus small tent argument is kind of misplaced. The party needs to stand for something. And to me, what the party needs to stand for is the dignity of every single human being and working class economics, pro-labor economics. So I'm not a, you know, let's let anything goes kind in within the party kind of a person. I think we've got to stand for something, but I don't think we can be ideologically rigid on every single thing. And to date, we've allowed anything goes on economics. We've allowed these corporate Democrats to basically skate through without any questioning, and we've enforced ideological purity on every single cultural issue. And I think those two things need to be reversed.
All right, Vivian's on the line from Orangeburg, South Carolina. Hi, Vivian.
Hello, Kimberly, and thank you for taking my call. I'm a 70-year-old African-American woman, so I'm not a spring chicken either. And as anybody knows, African-American women really have been stalwarts when it comes to supporting the Democratic Party and the get out to vote. And I think it's time for Nancy Pelosi to step down. That doesn't mean she can't continue to make contributions, and if there's someone younger, to perhaps share her experiences and wisdom. But I think right now the Democrat leadership, national leadership, really isn't articulating any message that resonates with young voters or with white working class voters. And I think that those people are vital to the future of the Democratic Party.
Well, what about that issue that Vivian points out? She points out that she's a black woman. She's talking about women. Heather, do the Democrats have a problem with being too old and too white?
I don't know about too white. I mean, I think when you look at the leadership in the House, and even Chuck Schumer, I mean, he is a little bit of an older fellow, too. They are all of these seasoned faces, if you will. And how does what they're saying resonate with younger voters? I'm not really sure about that. I think it is something that Democrats do think about a lot and consider. But again, I mean, Pelosi has pretty strong support among women, particularly in the caucus. And part of that is because she is the first woman to ever be the Speaker of the House. And she has been, in their minds, such an effective leader. Even though they haven't won back the House, she has been able to handle Trump in a way that they don't necessarily think that others would have. And so I think when you talk to members women are less likely within the caucus to criticize Pelosi or at least acknowledge her accomplishments before they do offer those criticisms.
Peter, what about the point that Vivian made about reaching out to working class whites? At the same time, Democrats need the support of minorities, too. Is it hard to juggle those two? And how effective is Nancy Pelosi at that?
I think we may make too much of the age issue. I mean, if you look at, you know, it's there's nothing, if it's even one of the candidates, you know, if you look at candidates who've actually done extremely well with younger voters on the presidential level in recent decades, you know, Bernie Sanders and Ron Paul in their respective parties actually had kind of tremendous, even kind of cult followings among young people. So I don't think that replacing Nancy Pelosi with someone who's 30 years younger in and of itself really accomplishes very much. I think the real question is the question of what's the message that the Democratic Party is articulating? What does it stand for? And how does that, and I think that there are some really big unanswered questions there. And I would say perhaps the biggest unanswered question is the Republican Party has shifted towards, under Donald Trump, towards a different position on trade. And that, I think, was a big part of why Trump was able to make some key inroads in industrial states. The Democratic Party, I think, really has to have a discussion about what its own view of globalization is. And I think that's very indistinct right now, and I think there are big cleavages, and I think that's one issue on which a strong Democratic message that's coherent, I think, is going to matter a lot more than the particular age of the next Speaker of the House.
So last month, Pelosi gave, it wasn't technically a filibuster, but it was a filibuster-esque speech on the House floor about Dreamers. It was the longest speech ever recorded on the House floor. Here's how she ended it.
My colleagues, for the last 8 hours, I have had the privilege of reading the testimony of so many Dreamers. I still have more, but I'll either just submit.
So, Crystal, I mean, is there somebody else within the party who would be able to really gain the attention over Dreamers as Nancy Pelosi did in that filibuster-like speech delivered all in high heels?
I am not going to take anything away from her in terms of the impressiveness of that moment. But yes, I do think we have other strong voices already in the House and who are about to be elected to the House. And part of the reason we don't know their names is because she and the other leadership have kept such a tight grip on power and haven't allowed them to have leadership and kind of bubble to the surface so that we can have a different image. I agree with Peter. For me, her age is not an issue. How long she's been there is more of an issue, but that's not really the piece. The piece is that at a time when the Democratic Party is, like, the word Democrat is an epithet in much of the country, and she fits so perfectly into this caricature of how we've gone astray and how we've become disconnected with much of the country, it's just very hard to overcome when you still have her in leadership.
Sam's on the line from Malden, Massachusetts. Hi there, Sam.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Great conversation. I think if you stand back and look at why the Democrats lost the election in 2016, to a party, if the party had always stood for, you know, for class issues, because politics is always about one thing, how do you slice up the pie? Who gets what? And for too long, the Democratic Party has aligned itself with elite interests, with elite corporate interests. Bernie's message was the right message. And the party took a wrong turn way back with Bill Clinton to the right, and it's never really recovered. If the Democratic Party had a consistent message about class interests, that you gotta look out for everyone, not just the elite, Trump would have been a gift to the Democratic Party on a silver platter. Mm. What better candidate to argue against than Donald Trump, the guy who represents elite interests? And you know what? They lost.
Well, what about that point that Sam makes, Heather? I mean, we do see a lot of Democrats moving leftward, supporting things like Medicare for All. Is Nancy Pelosi out of step with that leftward shift that that some are taking?
I don't think so. I think personally, as a politician, she's very progressive. You know, she's the liberal quote, elite from San Francisco. But she's also tried to be cognizant of all of the members of her caucus, including the Blue Dogs, and some still do exist, even though, you know, their numbers were decreased significantly after 2010. And so she tries not to really force them into positions that could hurt them back in their districts. I think, though, getting back to 2016, you talk to a lot of House Democrats, and they say that the problem, the reason that they didn't do as well in the House, they only picked up a handful of seats, was because they did rely too much on what they thought would be voters' disgust with Trump. They thought that Trump was going to help them win the House, and that's still a debate that they're having right now. Because there is so much chaos around the Trump administration, things do change daily, that Democrats, Pelosi on down, often find themselves having to respond to whatever, you know, the crisis of the day is coming from the White House. And so it's hard for them to articulate whatever national message they are getting out. And you can't argue that they haven't done well articulating that message or even creating it. But so that's one issue. And the other issue is that the issues that they do want to talk about, they can't because they have to respond to what Donald Trump tweeted that day.
So just in the few seconds we have left, Crystal, does Nancy Pelosi stay in power if the Dems take back the House, and why, in like 20 seconds?
I don't think so, simply because of the very large number of Democratic challengers running right now saying they are not going to support her.
What do you think, Peter? 20 seconds. Does Nancy Pelosi stay in power? And if not, why?
I think it'll be really fascinating. I mean, I do think there will be some sentiment for her to go, but she's a very she's also a very powerful player, and so I would be wary of kind of betting against her in some kind of internal Democratic struggle.
All right, Peter Beinart, contributing editor for The Atlantic. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Crystal Ball, founder and president of the People's House Project, thank you, too, for joining the conversation.
My pleasure. Thanks, Kim.
And Heather Cagle, congressional reporter for Politico, covering House Democrats, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, Kim.
You can continue the conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. And you can follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. Coming up tomorrow, fury over Facebook. Trump ignores an all-caps warning to Putin. Uproar over the White House leaks. Our weekly news roundtable goes behind the headlines. I'm Kimberly Atkins. This is On Point.